Welcome to the Finishing School Podcast, a discussion with and for women about identity, transitions through life stages, how to figure out who you want to be when you grow up, and all the things we didn't learn about in school. In short, it's a sometimes spiritual, sometimes silly look at how to be a grown woman. Whether you're becoming a mom for the first time or about to be an empty nester, modern womanhood and motherhood is complex, and the questions and conflicts we face with shifting roles and desires are many. Don't have your midlife crisis alone. Join me. I'm your host, Jessica Euler, and I'm stewarding this conversation on the brink of asking many of these questions in my own life. As my kids get older, my role as a mother changes, and as I have more time to reflect on who I am in the world, I'm surrounded by friends in the same boat. And I know if we're talking about these issues, odds are you are too. My guest today is Ruthie Taylor. She is a Tacoma realtor, speaker, trainer. She is an amazing real estate agent. She's been a longtime friend of mine. And one thing that I really love about Ruthie is she works hard to build community. And to serve her community with her experience and her knowledge. Even if you are not a client of hers, she will be very generous with sharing information. If you're not already, if you're local, you probably know Ruthie. And if you're not, you should be following her on Instagram, where she has some really great information for buyers and sellers, kind of interesting strategies that are a little bit outside of the box, but just actually really wise and strategic and helpful. And she's hilarious. She has really funny reels. So follow her there. I think you will enjoy this conversation, whether you are a first-time home buyer or buying your third or fourth home. Ruthie has some great insight into the process right now and some really helpful criteria about how to think about the whole thing so that you don't end up in heartbreak, which it's happening. I know it's hard out there right now if you're buying a house. But the idea of home often includes the dream of buying a home. So I wanted to share Ruthie's insights with you all. I think you will enjoy it. Hi, Ruthie. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Jess. Happy to be here.
So glad you're here. So today we're going to talk about all things real estate in regards to home and what that means. And even though you can build a home anywhere, you can build a home in an apartment, you can make a home in a dorm room, you know, that bigger concept of what home really is so all-encompassing. But for so many people, myself included, owning a home and buying a home is a big part of that dream of home. And you have a lot of wisdom and experience to share. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into real estate?
Yeah. So my husband and I moved to Tacoma, can't even remember now. I think it's been a decade or so. And originally we moved here to church plant. So we were unemployed and we were coming from overseas and had a vision to church plant. And my husband got into real estate sort of on the side to make money. And I had always been in sales. And so I was working in sales. Long story short, fast forward a couple of years, the church plant didn't work out. My husband was having a lot of success in real estate. I had had a baby and I thought I wanted to be a stay-at-home mom until I had a baby. And I was like, wow, work is a lot easier than being a stay-at-home mom.
Amen.
So I joined up forces with my husband, got licensed. I'd been in sales my entire life and, real estate was not really anything that I'd thought about, but he was having a lot of success. So I just kind of jumped in with him. And that was 6 years ago. He's been in the industry, I think 8 or 9 years now. And we last year, left our franchise and started our own independent brokerage here in Tacoma called Mosaic Real Estate. And we opened a week before lockdowns, which was
super fun. Yeah.
But we've grown. We started with 18 agents and we're at 76 today.
Wow.
In a year, and we continue to grow. And it's really, really fun and exciting and something new every day.
Wow. Yeah, I bet. Okay. So I want to hear you are so good at sharing, I guess I would call them more than tips, but like you're really good at sharing information and, getting people to kind of think about, I guess, strategies around home buying. And even more than that, like what a realtor can do for you. And what kind of questions you should be asking a realtor, all of that. And maybe high level, let's start with what would you say to someone who came to you today as potentially a first-time home buyer, you know, in this market, in Tacoma, which if I'm not mistaken, it's the hottest real estate market in the country right now.
That is true.
That is bananas. Bananas. I mean, we experienced that. We took 2 years trying to buy this house that we're in. And, you know, and part of that was us and sort of what we needed to process and like the decision making and the narrowing down of what we wanted and, you know, all of that. But, but you know, we made 4 solid offers on houses before one was accepted. And it really felt like a miracle. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a pretty amazing story. But yeah, so what would you say to someone who, you know, is in that position of like, okay, ready to buy a house. I have the vision for it. We want to do this for our family. How do we even start?
Yep. Well, I would say the first thing is you have to erase everything that HGTV sort of brings to our mind about the home buying process. It is nothing like that. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I feel like a lot of those shows have created these Pinterest expectations of what our home should be like. Joanna Gaines is not designing all of our homes.
No.
And so I think, especially when you're a first-time home buyer, the expectations of the vision of this Pinterest perfect home is in our minds. And then the reality of our income and budget and what we're pre-approved for and, you know, the escalating market collides. And when my husband and I bought our first home, I mean, we were clueless. And we were also, you know, in our early 30s, and nobody had ever talked to us about wealth building with real estate. We had moved here for ministry. We knew we needed a place. We were spending all our money on rent. But we didn't have a strategy as to what this home could do for us in the long run regarding wealth. And this is not every home buyer wants to hear this conversation. So I always present this because people are in one of two categories. They want their dream home with the white picket fence, or they're open to the idea that this is their starter home, which is going to get them to the next home, which is going to get them to the next home. Mm-hmm. And that would be my advice. If you can be open-minded, no matter what your age, if you're just out of college or if you're buying your first home in your 40s or 50s, this first purchase, if you can take away those Pinterest dreams and just look at it as the stepping stone to your next home, I think you can have a lot of success in building wealth through real estate. Now, some people they do not have that in mind. They want their dream home. They want their white picket fence. They want their, you know, shiplap walls, and they won't hear anything about the other element. And that is okay. You know, you do you, and I will represent either buyer. But the buyer who wants to invest in real estate to build wealth is my favorite type of buyer to work with, because I've worked with so many buyers who are these blue collar, home buyers who pretty much have these set incomes, who don't have, you know, generations of wealth being passed on to them, who are working their way up, but will probably never get a 6-figure raise in their lifetime. But this small investment that they make, and they've lowered their expectations, they're just like, I just need 4 walls and heat, you know? And if they can just make the sacrifice of this lowering their expectations and investing in something that isn't their dreams, but is their stepping stone, that stepping stone can build equity in an incredible amount of time to help them get into their dream home. And what I find is a lot of these people, when they realize that they can build wealth through real estate, they don't buy their dream home next. They buy another stepping stone to buy another stepping stone to realize, you know what, maybe my dream home is this, is a vacation home in Hawaii that I can go to. Or maybe my dream home is buying other properties that will put my kids through college. Or maybe that my dream home is an investment property that will be my retirement versus the four walls that HGTV shows that has all the luxurious furniture and, you know, backyards and pools and all that stuff. It's just a different way to look at real estate. And that's how my husband and I have built our wealth. And not because we were taught that, we kind of got a little lucky and stumbled our way through the path. And it's been an incredible opportunity for us to build wealth. And so sharing that knowledge of what we've learned with other people is like what we get most excited about, because we have seen so many people who have average blue collar jobs.
Yeah.
And they are now millionaires. Their net worth is, I mean, it's just mind blowing. And it's so fun when we come across clients who are open-minded to that path.
Yeah.
And it's okay if you're not.
Right.
We like to look at real estate as exactly that, a stepping stone to wealth.
Yeah. That makes so much sense. And I think probably in this market, that's a really smart strategy because, you know, say you find your quote unquote dream home or like, you know, the cute home that you walk in and you just feel like, oh, this is it. You're competing against dozens of other probably higher offers, right? And like the escalating clauses. And I mean, yeah, it's insane right now. I can relate to that story a little bit and just how you and Andy got started with, you know, home buying. We kind of did the same thing. We realized, so we were in our, I think our, like, I would say mid to late 20s. And we had friends who start like our age who started buying houses. And we were just kind of like, what? Like, we didn't even think that that was an option, you know, because
we had a
very modest income, you know, one income. I was home with babies and Justin was in the army, very, you know, fixed. And we just felt like buying a home that's totally beyond our reach. But then when we started seeing friends do it, we started looking into it and realizing like, oh, actually, we can do this. And our first home was on Hilltop. You know, it was a great little house. And that was, yeah, I remember that. And that was what we could do. And that totally served as a stepping stone to get our second house, which we were in for 15 years. And that was a great house. That was not our dream house, but we made it work. And I think that's kind of what you're talking about is making it work with a goal of a future, you know, something, whether that's the vacation home or upsizing or whatever it is. And having that second house and building the equity there is totally what allowed us to be in what feels like our dream house now. But I also recognize like this house it's going to serve our family in terms of wealth building and equity and, you know, helping with kids college, et cetera. But also like it can serve so many more people is kind of our vision for it. But I think that the crunch point that's hard is like that compromise of, okay, like here's my dream of what my home should be or not should be, but like what I want my home to be, what I want it to feel like and look like. And then, you know, that butts up with the reality of what we can afford, how much we can renovate, you know, all of that. And so there's like a deeper spiritual issue that I think is really interesting. And yes, that, you know, contentment, gratitude, and also I think just like plain old resourcefulness, you know, like it does not have to be HGTV, Pinterest, pretty to be full of beauty and creativity and, you know, like, here I am with my roadside finds and, you know, and just vision and creativity. But do you feel like that's a barrier for a lot of clients who are going through the home buying process and looking and kind of getting stuck on maybe just not having a vision or, you know, maybe not having the means to take a small fixer-upper and actually fix it up?
Yeah, I think we just get caught up in that comparison game, right? We're looking at people's homes on Instagram and we're like, how do they have these quartz countertops and, you know, all the beautiful fixtures and expensive appliances? And, you know, why can't I have that? And it really does, I think, the comparison game is, I think, what takes our joy away from the process and just realizing that we're, again, in different situations and scenarios. And, you know, I think a lot of us, especially for parents, we're going, I want to create this place that my kids have memories and that, you know, and the reality is, I mean, my life began in a trailer. Like my dad was in the military. My mom came overseas from Korea. We had nothing. And then I grew up in military housing, you know, like they didn't buy their first, the only house that they've ever bought is the one that they currently still live in. That I was in high school when they purchased that. And my memories aren't from the types of cabinets they had or the furniture they had, right? It was, my memories are in my parents, not the four walls around me. And I think we just get so caught up in like providing this great experience for our kids. And you guys, I mean, kids can grow up in apartments. They can grow up at grandma's house. It is not the high-end appliances and couches that matter.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that really speaks to like my last episode, I was talking about that idea of like, what is home? And it really kind of comes down to, I think it comes down to intention. You know, being intentional with wherever you're living, whether it's in a trailer or an apartment or, you know, your dream home, it doesn't matter. Like you could have all the fancy finishes and appliances in the world, but your home could still be lacking that heart and that connection and time and energy where you're investing in your relationships. So that part of the dream, sometimes we overlook when we're chasing the, you know, the upgrades. Kind of.
And I think a lot, you know, it's so interesting. And I think back to when Andy and I first got married is our experience of home, you know, when we partner, we're bringing our experiences together and creating something new. And what's so interesting, like my husband's mom is literally like Martha Stewart. She can make anything beautiful. She's just super crafty and DIY and just like every dinner looks beautiful. The presentation of everything is astounding. When I got married, I just said, Mom, can you just do it? Because she can just make anything look beautiful. And I don't have that. And, you know, I think about the way that I grew up and we never entertained. My parents never had people over. I mean, there was never any new furniture. I mean, literally nothing ever changed. There was no mantle change for the holidays. There was no table settings. I mean, and so I didn't even think about aesthetics until I married my husband. And we were living in this house for 7 years. And he was like, so are you ever going to put anything up on the walls? And I was like, oh. He was like, I just kind of feel like we live in a hospital. Like we've lived here and there's like nothing is, like you don't decorate. I'm like, oh, is that important to you? Like, cause his mom was Martha Stewart.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it just was not anything that I was brought up with or raised with. And maybe it's cultural or financial. I don't know. It wasn't important to my parents and it never was important to me.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, this is really important to him. Coziness is important to him.
Yeah.
And so just kind of combining our desires and needs and wants has been conflict inducing and very, a very interesting dynamic when you just bring households together and figuring out what's important to you to feel like you're at home. Yeah.
So that is such a good question. I think that's really the key right there. That question is what is important to you to feel like home? Yeah. And for some people, it's like, a completely clean and orderly house. For some people, it's tons of art and like personal items up on the walls, you know? But really, that is such an important question to ask. And then how do you take that vision and, you know, go look at 20 houses and think about your life in them? That's actually something I am so curious about. So, you know, we just went through the home buying process and looked at so many houses over the last 2 or 3 years. And definitely every time we decided to put an offer on a house, by the time we decided to put that offer, I was already like, okay, so that couch is going to go here. This room, I think I want to paint this color. You know, like I was imagining our life and our family and our stuff in the home, because that was an important part of the process for me. I had to do that in order to feel like, yes, this is, you know, let's say yes, let's do this, let's move forward. Whereas Justin was like, babe, dial it back, you know, like we haven't even, this is step one, you know, of 100. And how do you walk your clients through that process? Because I had to do that. Mm-hmm. I had to go there. Yes. But then of course I had my heart broken a couple times where I felt like, this is the house for our family. You know, this is the opportunity. And if this one doesn't work out, like we've missed our window is how totally. I felt, you know? Yeah. So there was that, the bigger trust issue, of course, and faith that like God is leading us and it's, you know, we committed the whole process to him and his guidance, but it's so hard to not be heartbroken. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's a lot of therapy and I'm like part psychologist. And so every time I work with a buyer, I sit down with them and do what's called a buyer's consultation. And this is an opportunity for all of us to get on the same page, because often what's important to one spouse, the other spouse, they haven't even vocalized that to each other. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes non-negotiables, like for one is like, wait, that's we have to have this. And there's like this tension, right? And so we have to work through that, because the last thing that I want to do is find that perfect house and then they're just like fighting in the kitchen. And so a buyer's consultation is so important to really hammer out expectations, non-negotiables, and then strategy, explaining this market, and then the mental and emotional preparation regarding competing in this market, because it is emotional and it is exhausting, because the very first house you put an offer on, it's unfortunately now there's a lower percentage of you getting that. Where a year and a half ago, I had never not won an offer, wow. You know, and now it's just like, oh my gosh, you know, there's a lot of top agents in our industry. And, you know, we talk amongst each other, like, wait, what's going on? Like a lot of our confidence has been rocked, because so many of us who have been used to so much success, all of a sudden we're writing incredible offers and, you know, not getting them accepted for our clients, which is really heartbreaking. So going back to your question, there is a lot of just explaining it all on the front end, getting it all out on the front end. So we're not having to figure it out on the back end. And I literally, you have two types of people, and it sounds like you and your husband are opposite. And my husband and I are also, I've had clients walk into a house, the perfect house for them, but their sectional, because they're picturing their sectional in this couch, doesn't fit.
Oh dear.
And they have not written an offer on this perfect house because their sectional that they picked up at a yard sale didn't fit in this house.
Yeah.
And so it is important to have these conversations because when you walk away from the perfect house because your $150 sectional does not fit in the house, it's not okay. And then you have the people like I'm like your husband. I feel like I'm always like everybody's husband. I don't picture my furniture or where the Christmas tree is going. I'm just looking at the space and going, do I like the space? Can I work with this space? Do I like this house? Do I like the location? Yeah. Cause for me, everything about it, a home can be changed with the exception of where it is. Right.
That's true.
And so you have a lot of people who are picturing all of these things and a house won't work because their things won't fit into it. And then you have people looking at the house going, the house is perfect. We can change all the things to make all of our things fit, or buy new things.
Buy new things.
Yep. So you just kind of have to have it. Well, for me personally, I want to have all these conversations on the front end, get it all out, get the tension out, because if spouses are not aligned, on the front end, it's going to be a really, high tension, emotional process. And I'm not going to waste my time in this market when I know I'm working triple time. And I don't want to waste their time. So it's like, let's get it all worked out up front, so we can be strategic and swift and, you know, we know exactly what we're doing with the game plan.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. So what's the craziest story you have about trying to buy right now?
I mean, you have
so many.
Yeah, I'm a listing agent and a buyer's agent. So, you know, when I represent a seller, I am seeing all the crazy, insane offers and what people are willing to do.
Saying like, I will buy this house no matter what, how it comes valued, no matter what the inspection is, no matter how much it costs, I want to buy this house. I mean,
everything. I mean, pretty much in this market, every contingency is waived. And then you're bringing in lots of extra cash if you're financing to cover the difference. Otherwise, you're just paying cash. So you're not having to deal with appraisals and, you know, all the rigmarole that comes with financing a home. But most people finance a property. I mean, most people, unless they're coming from California or selling a house in Seattle, are not coming to the area with bags of cash. But man, I have seen more cash offers for my listings in just the past 3 months than I have in my entire real estate career. It's just shocking how much cash is. I think a lot of people are borrowing from like their 401ks, borrowing from parents, doing everything that they can to be competitive in this market, or even hard money, and then refinancing out, you know, to compete, which is just, it breaks my heart. I hate representing a buyer and just telling them like, I don't recommend anything that you're doing.
Wow.
And if you want this house, you know, this is what you're competing against. It's really tough. And I also know that the equity that they're going to gain, the start to wealth building, in my opinion, is worth it. And you know, people keep saying, is it going to crash? Are we in a bubble? Mm-hmm. And I can't look into a crystal ball and say it's not. But what would be concerning to me is if all of a sudden these investors stopped investing in our market, that would kind of tell me, okay, like people are pulling out their money. But it is so, I mean, investors are still flocking to our market. They're still overpaying. My husband and I are still active. We just put a property under contract last week as an investment property. I mean, because we see our area in the Northwest, it's such a unique gem. We're surrounded by water. We're surrounded by industry above us, military below us. We're not like Vegas or Texas where there's just land and land and land and land to keep building. We're really in this unique pocket. And because of lending rules, I mean, what happened in 2008 that scenario is just not the same anymore. It has everything to do with supply and demand and the lack of inventory and new construction and incredibly low interest rates. So in my opinion, if you can buy, buy. Do everything that you can to buy. Lower your expectations. And buy something. Just buy it.
Anything. Yeah. Yeah. And then in 3 years, you'll have that equity to put into another property. But the tricky thing is, are you going to be able to afford another property in 3 years? You know, well, like right now, home values are just insane. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, what are your thoughts about that?
Yep. So what I'm finding, because a lot of my clients are right during COVID, all of a sudden their houses became too small for them. So they need more space.
Yes.
Any of us who have homeschooled our children realized we need more space. So what a lot of my clients are doing in this situation is they're selling their homes and earning a lot over list price. And understanding that that's really not gain. They're using all of that for a down payment for their next house. And so honestly, everything that they're earning from as far as the extras of the sale of their home, they're applying to be competitive to purchase a new home. Yeah. And so it's kind of an even exchange as far as where that money, how you're moving that money. But the exchange for you in the long run is going to be beneficial because the value of that property is so much higher.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
So you're just, it's an equal exchange for more net worth.
Right. So you're spending more, but you're making more on your sale. Kind of levels the tide a little bit. Yeah. So what would be like step one for a first-time home buyer? So you'd have this buyer's consultation where you kind of talk about expectations. And I mean, how often are you having to kind of redirect people to like the area that they want to buy in, or the, you know, the neighborhood, the, yeah, how are you coaching people as far as like, or you could do this, you know, you could look here.
Yeah. I let the statistics speak for themselves. And so when I do a buyer's consultation, I'm finding out their criteria, right? Like, this is what we want to spend. This is the area that we want to live in. There's only three pieces to the home buying process, like three pieces to the puzzle: price, condition, location. That is it. Price, condition, location. So if you're pre-approved to a certain amount, we know that we can't, you know, add more money to that. So price is pretty stuck. The condition and the location of the home are the only two variables that we can move around. And so if people are like, I only want to live in the North End, or I only want to live in UP, and I only want a turnkey home. Well, what I do is I take their price. I take the criteria, like three beds, two baths, and the square footage and the location. And I enter all that in the MLS, and I look at what's sold in the last 90 days. And I show them and I say, look, this is what fits your criteria in the last 90 days. If there is two homes that have sold with that criteria, then I just tell them there's not a lot of options. Then I switch that criteria from sold to active to show them, are there any homes that currently meet that criteria? If there is not, then I say, the only thing that you can do is move your expectations with location or condition. Which do you want to wiggle around with? And so sometimes we do that exercise. Obviously, if people are pre-approved more, there's more options. And it's always a live exercise, because I show them, look, 20 homes sold in the last 60 days. Great. How many are active? One? Ooh. Okay. Do we want to keep looking for that unicorn, or do we want to expand our criteria? Nope. You want to keep looking for that unicorn? Okay. Just know that we're going to be waiting. Yep. You want to expand it? Okay. These are our options when we expand. Look, there's 17 other homes.
Yeah.
What would you like to do?
Yeah. That's such a good formula and way to think about it, that, you know, some things are fixed and you can't control, and some things you can. And it's, I mean, just like in life, it always comes back to like, you can't change a lot of things, but you can change your perspective, your, you know, reaction to your circumstances, that kind of internal response. Yeah, I mean, we found our unicorn, and it took a long time. Yeah. And it took like, you know, the perfect storm of, we had a buyer in the wings with a cash offer. We had like the most ridiculously low interest rate, like for that little teeny blip. You know, I mean, we couldn't have predicted all of those things. So how do you protect your buyers in this market where people are doing crazy things and like, you know, here's my firstborn child, I want this house. I mean, even when we were buying, I feel like, you know, maybe 2 years ago, I would have said, okay, here's our offer. And could we maybe get like an appliance allowance? Because all the appliances are super old, or whatever, you know, or maybe can we, you know, just bring the price down 10 grand or whatever. And it just seems like that's not even an option. Like, it feels like buyers have no room to negotiate in this market, because if they're asking for anything, it's a no-go. So yeah, just how do you coach buyers through that with, you know, you want to be competitive, but you also don't want them to be taken advantage of.
100%. Yeah. I think one of my strengths is I have the conversations that I feel like a lot of the hard conversations that people don't want to have, because ultimately I don't want it to end in heartbreak. I don't want you to go through you know, seeing 17 homes and writing 13 offers only to say, this is, I guess I'm not cut out for this. I guess we're just going to rent. I'm going to have this hard conversation up front. And then when I write up a contract for a buyer, this is understanding this contract is where I feel like newer agents or inexperienced agents really struggle in competing. But I understand every single contingency in this contract and what it means if we waive it or reduce it. And so my job is to make sure the buyer understands if we are reducing a contingency or waiving a contingency, these are the repercussions and this is what it means to you. So my buyers know exactly what they're doing when they write an offer. They know exactly the risks of waiving a contingency. So there's no heartache in the end. And in addition to that, what I tell my clients is at the end of the day, because you have to put your best foot forward. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, if you found out that the winning offer was $3,000 more than your offer, are you going to kick yourself? Or are you going to go, no, I put my best foot forward and Godspeed, right? At the end of the day, you just have to feel good about going to bed at night, knowing that you did your absolute best. And we just sometimes our best, unfortunately, can't compete with a cash offer that's $200,000 more than us. But what's going to be really frustrating is if you found out the winning offer was $2,000 more than you, and you were just like, this is all I want to do. Yep. And so it's just that feeling knowing I put my best foot forward. If I didn't win, it wasn't meant to be. Yep. If I do win, I know that I won because I put my best foot forward. And my realtor explained every single contingency in the offer that I waived or reduced. And I know the repercussions of those decisions. That feeling, because I never want to have a buyer call me with remorse, you know, 3 weeks after they closed on a property saying you didn't explain this, right?
Yeah. You have to be willing to live with whatever conditions you set up in that contract. Yeah. And that can be really hard when you're, you know, when it's been this long process and you're looking and it is emotional, you know, it is. And how often do we make these huge, huge financial decisions? And not only financial, like there's all the logistics of moving and, you know, it's a lot of work. And so I think it's easy to get caught up in just like, okay, like we'll do anything, you know? But yeah, at the end of the day, you don't want to look back and feel regret or, oh wow, maybe we overextended ourselves or whatever, you know? But yeah, I think I hear what you're saying about you don't want to miss it by you want to make it work. If it's the right house for your family.
Yeah.
You kind of have to stretch a little right now.
Yeah. And then there is opportunity. Like there are homes that have price reductions. There are homes that come back on market. There are homes that are overpriced to begin with and sit on the market for too long. Mm-hmm. And so, having an agent that is able to recognize opportunity, so you're not having to leverage everything, you can still, buy a house without waiving an inspection. You can still waive a house or get a house without, spending $50,000 over list price. You can still get a house and ask for the buyer to pay closing costs. You can still offer to get a house contingent. I mean, these are rarer now, but there is still so much opportunity in the market if you know how to look for it. My buyers aren't always having to risk everything and waive everything. Yeah. There certainly is still opportunity in the market if you know where to look.
And I think that's good news to so many people because I think, you know, what we're seeing and hearing about, it just makes it feel impossible. But yeah, I mean, we bought our house with a contingent offer and that was shocking. You know, we just felt like there's no way we're ever going to get a house in this market. Yeah. But everything came together and I feel like you probably have so many stories of that right house and the right timing and the right, you know, the right buyer with the right seller matching up for your clients. And because you've been working so hard at finding those opportunities and knowing, you know, how to negotiate, which is, I totally feel like our realtor, I say that she was like our home buying midwife because it wasn't just about the contract. It was like, I mean, she walked with us through years of the decision making, the asking, you know, do we really want to do this? Is it worth it? What do we want in a house? What would make it worth moving? She was so patient and showed us like dozens and dozens of houses. And, you know, we had failed offers and we learned a lot every single time. And I think that's another part of the process that is really valuable, especially in this market. Like when you're doing this with your clients, when you're writing up offers and trying to get to that one, you know, win, there may be a couple rejections along the way, but I feel like for us, we learned something every single time. We learned what we really, really wanted and what maybe we could do without. We learned how to write a better offer, you know, how to be more competitive. And there were times where I felt like, oh, maybe we should have, you know, maybe we should have like risked a little bit more, because maybe we would have got it, or maybe we couldn't risk that much on, you know, maybe we were like totally at our max and that was our best offer. And that just, that wasn't meant to be, you know?
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, especially if this is a first time purchase, you don't really realize how much you want it until you lost it.
Yeah.
Right.
Totally.
And so a lot of clients go through this, is like, they're not willing to put their best foot forward yet.
Yeah.
And then the pain of that decision kind of kicks them in the butt, going, okay, I got to see, I see what I have to do now. And that's normal. And unfortunately, you know, sometimes you just have to go through that with your clients. They have to lose for them to realize, oh,
that we really wanted that.
Like, yeah. And so, you know, it's our human response. Like I want a deal still. I don't like a painful price for anything.
Yeah,
you know, totally. There's got to be a way and some wiggle room, and but it's this market doesn't allow for it again.
Yeah, unless no bargain.
Unless you're seeing one of these, you know, opportunities, and so so sometimes you just have to let your client fail when you know that they're not doing their best, but they say that this is their best. Like I almost always know those situations. I have written up offers going, I know that they're not going to win this.
Yeah.
But they have to go through that emotional process for them to realize, okay,
this is really what we want.
I won't continue to do that because I'm not going to waste my time or theirs, but I can recognize when they have to lose in order to get motivated to win.
Yeah. That resonates so much for sure. Okay. One last question for you.
Yeah.
So let's talk about once you get that home for your clients, do you have any advice for kind of making it home? You know, so if they have bought a house, they've like made that first step, they recognize this isn't our dream home, but it's a stepping stone to something else. You are so, I know you have a lot of insight and experience kind of making that home work for you. And, you know, whether it comes to Airbnb or, you know, other rental income opportunities, or even renovating and updating, how would you advise your clients in that regard?
Yeah. So it really just depends on their motivation of buying, right? And what they're looking to do, how long they're planning on staying in the home. When Andy and I realized, because our very first purchase was a duplex in Hilltop, which we still own to this day. And when we bought the home, it came with tenants that paid $1,000 a month. And then we didn't have kids at the time. And it was a 2-bedroom with a loft, 1-bathroom house. And, you know, we were super close to downtown, the convention center. So we Airbnb'd the extra room in our house. And a lot of people at the time, because this was, I don't know how long ago, a decade ago, like people weren't willing to do that. It wasn't as common. And then when we stopped Airbnb, we actually had an exchange student. And so house hacking is sort of this term that's become popular now. Andy and I have looked at every property that we've ever purchased going, how do we get somebody else to pay for a portion of this mortgage, right? So we can keep more money in our pockets. And so if I have the client that looks at real estate as this wealth building opportunity, these are usually the conversations that we have. Like, can we Airbnb a portion of this house? Can we rent out a room? in this house in some way, if it's not through Airbnb, through an exchange student, or just having a tenant in there, just looking for opportunities to have other people help you cover that mortgage, if not all of the mortgage, because then you're just keeping more money in your pocket, right? This is a $300, $400, $500, $800,000 purchase that you're not paying the monthly mortgage on. This is how real estate investors get rich. And how landlords get rich, because other people are paying their mortgage. So we have these strategy sessions to figure out what they're looking for. We've had these strategy sessions to figure out, okay, what are your capabilities? Are you pretty handy? Can you, you know, YouTube some, you know, drywall things, or, you know, fixing electrical outlets or plumbing? Or are you just like, I am clueless, I work 80 hours a week, and I need to hire out professionals. So, you know, it's really a case by case scenario.
Sure.
And what I tell all my clients is paint and fixtures are the best return for your money. For the most part, require no skilled labor, and can make such an impact on the value of your home, or the not value, because that's not, we're not changing the structure or adding square footage, but the saleability rather, like what somebody's willing to pay, because a room is not orange and it's like a neutral color. And you've got fresh modern fixtures versus, you know, original old fixtures. And so these sort of conversations can really make a difference. When I'm helping a seller sell their house, it's like looking at the condition of their home. And often it's just taking that 1980s furniture out and putting some modern furniture in, or just replacing the shag rug with, you know, new carpet. So it's not necessarily tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars of improvements that need to be made. It's just minor, minor things that can really make a big impact.
Yeah, that's so good. Yeah, we're definitely on board with the house hacking, 100%.
Yes, yes, and, do it, girl.
Yeah, I mean, that's, we are doing it.
Yes.
And I think that it makes things so much more accessible when you have that mindset, because something that would be prohibitive, you know, if it has an apartment that you can build out or a room that you can rent, you know, obviously you have to be the right person. You have to be willing to do that and know what comes with it and the risks, and as well as the benefits. But for us, it was kind of a no-brainer. And also, you know, it's a way to think about, you know, the future needs of perhaps our parents as they age, and maybe they aren't able to live on our own. You know, if we're still in this house, we're going to have a place for them to go.
100%.
Where, you know, it's not going to be in our living space, but they're going to be close enough that we can help them and support them.
Yes. Our current house, that was never even a consideration when we bought our current house. We went from our duplex to our current house in Faircrest that has a daylight basement apartment in it. When we bought the house, it had a tenant in it. So we've lived in this house with a stranger downstairs for over a year who helped pay a portion of the mortgage.
Yeah.
This house had a lot of bedrooms. And at the time we had a 4-month-old. So we rented two rooms to exchange students. So we had a tenant and two exchange students helping us cover our mortgage when I was a stay-at-home mom and my husband was fairly new in real estate. Which helped us renovate the home because it was in original horrible condition. And then when that tenant moved out, we Airbnb'd it. And then when that season changed, we had exchange students move down there. And then when that season changed, when my in-laws retired and moved down here, they lived with us for a year. Like that was we couldn't even think that far ahead into the future. But my in-laws lived with us for a year. And like for most, I have a great relationship with my in-laws. I love them. But for most people to think about their in-laws living with them is a little overwhelming, but it was a completely separate daylight apartment. So it was just a great situation. And this is a house that we still live in, but we've purchased vacation rentals that we've Airbnb'd, that Airbnb tenants pay that mortgage above and beyond. And so, and that has helped us with financing the repairs that those properties needed. And so it's every property we've ever purchased, we have never fully paid the mortgage. It's almost always been paid by somebody else. And that's how we continue to purchase real estate. Is it inconvenient? Yes, 100%. Is it worth the wealth building opportunity? 100 times over. Yes. Yeah. And so you just kind of have to weigh that risk versus reward, because not everybody is willing to go through that inconvenience, depending on the season of life that you're in.
Yeah. I think it's so smart. It's so smart to think that way, to think out of the box. And especially with, I mean, we kind of have a housing crisis in this region right now, you know, and there's been so much talk about, you know, Tacoma rezoning and what that's going to mean. Are houses going to be torn down, or, you know, single family houses going to be torn down so that developers come in and put in fourplexes? You know, like how, where is that middle accessible house option for the middle class? And I just think, you know, having this kind of out of the box thinking around renting or Airbnb or having a tenant or some kind of income, it just makes so much sense right now. And for us, I mean, it has not been, we've done co-housing before. In our old house, we did co-housing, and it was, I mean, if you saw the room, you would think that is crazy. Like nobody would want to live there. And for us, it was more, it wasn't a stranger. It was friends. It was, you know, people who were a part of our lives and a part of our family. But now in our current home, we have a totally separate apartment and then a third floor apartment, which does use, you know, does use our inside, our main entrance and our inside stairs. And so that's someone we know and trust and, you know, is a part of our lives. But the basement apartment, like, we don't need that space. We don't even go down there. We don't ever hear our tenant. You know, it's great.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And going back to this crisis, what this allows for you to do is also give.
Like, yes.
We have had single moms stay in our space who are going through crisis. We have had, we've gifted our lake house as to families in need. There's just a huge opportunity to not just help get your mortgage covered, which is a perk. You have such a huge opportunity to gift your resource to those in need. And that ultimately is like the best gift of all, right? To be able to purchase and grow in wealth, and to give back.
Yeah.
And so it's been, such a blessing to be able to share what we've been, I don't want to say what we've been blessed with because it's been strategic, but what we've thought through, to be able to give back, because now we're just, we're in such a wonderful position, and it feels, it makes it all worth it. I mean, eventually when more of the mortgages are paid down, we just have such vision of what we want to do to serve our community. And those in need. And so it's just, it's a win-win overall. Yeah.
I totally share that vision for sure. Yeah. I see it as a way to serve other people, and we want to have our, you know, eventually be more flexible with that and have our apartment upstairs be a place of refuge or a place where, you know, just to serve someone in need. And I mean, it kind of is right now. I mean, yeah. Anyway, it just, yeah, I love that vision, that building wealth and growing, you know, your real estate is not just, it's not just about serving your family. It's about serving way more than that. So
yeah,
I'm with you there. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Ruthie. This was such a good conversation. You brought
up
a lot of great points, and I think it'll be encouraging for people who are in this process. I hope it will. You've given us a lot of food for thought, and I just keep doing what you're doing. I know you are working so hard right now for your buyers in particular. Probably not working as hard for your sellers, but I know that's
You'd be surprised. You'd be surprised.
Yeah, there's work to be done on both ends, no doubt. But thanks for sharing everything that you're doing and all of your good insights and resources.
Oh, I loved it. So good to catch up with you too.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Well, keep posting.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this conversation. If you enjoyed it and know a friend who would love it, please, please, please pass it on. Word of mouth is how we can grow this community. Thanks again.